This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Micah Hanks, do you want to talk any more about this CNN thing, or should we dovetail back to Pentacle?
Yeah, we might as well get back from Pentagon to Pentacle, because, again, we saw the news. We'll have to wait and see what comes of it, but who knows? It may be interesting. If it happens before the election, that'll be really interesting. Let's say I won't hold my breath. Now, in the 1960s, you know, we had Hynek on the lecture circuit. We had a frustrated computer scientist who was assisting him named Jacques Vallée, who thought that Hynek needed to be back and working on the scientific side, not the public side of the issue. There were a lot of high hopes at that time that the Condon Committee was going to actually produce a favorable report that might encourage a UAP task force in a very different kind of way. It would have been a UFO task force of the 1960s. I mean, they actually had hoped that maybe Condon and the team there, Bob Lowe and the guys working at the University of Colorado, would actually do something. That ended up not happening, of course, but while Hynek's out there on the road and his files, all the Blue Book documents, all the other documentation he has about UFOs are in such a state of disarray, Jacques Vallée says, if I don't do this, nobody will. I've got to try and organize Allen's files for him. So he drives over to his office and gets them and puts them all in boxes and carries them in his Buick over to their research center, and he starts organizing the files, and he comes across a memorandom. And this memorandum wasn't called Pentacle. It was actually a memorandum that was written by a fellow who was signed by H.C. Cross, but at the time that he found it, he called this individual so as not to release the gentleman's name. He called him Pentacle. The document was addressed to a Mr. Goll, G-O-L-L, but it was at the top of the document. You can actually see it says, Attention, Captain Edward J. Ruppelt. And this document would have dated from January of 1953. And what it essentially was saying was, you got to keep in mind, at this time, the Battelle Memorial Institute had just begun its own study of a few thousand Blue Book files that were all in hand at that time, which for it to be in 1953 and January, no less, this would probably also have to include some documentation that was carried over to Blue Book, probably from Projects Grudge and Sign before that. This memorandum to Mr. Goll essentially is saying that they advise that they postpone the forthcoming Robertson panel, as it would come to be known, on part really by a recommendation from the CIA, and they're saying that they want this postponed because, according to Pentacle, Mr. Cross, he's saying, until we have completed our analysis, you know, this may be beneficial, and therefore this panel shouldn't be held first, and we need to be able to discuss with them what should and should not be said. Vallée's seeing this, and he's reading it, and he's going, what in the world? Hold on. Who has thousands of Blue Book reports? Allen and I don't even have thousands of Blue Book reports. What are they talking about? And then furthermore, in the document, it also states, it makes references rather to this Project Stork, and it's talking about analyzing areas where a lot of UFO sightings are occurring, and it states on the document, many different types of aerial activity should be secretly and purposefully scheduled within the area. Now, the way that Vallée interpreted that line, he saw that as possibly indicating that they were trying to stage a fake wave of UFO sightings in areas where people have been seeing a lot of them. The document never came to light publicly for a number of years until eventually there was one that was presumably leaked. It was obtained by Barry Greenwood. Greenwood, when he's able to confirm that he has this document, they show it to Vallée. It came to light first in the early 90s in the original publication of his four-part series, Forbidden Science, the first volume, the first chapter of that, which were his personal diaries from over the years, and he references having read this document. When the document actually is leaked years later, he's like, yes, you know, this is obviously the same thing that I had seen. But that's where the controversy really begins, because Greenwood and others are like, you know, listen, I don't really think this necessarily conveys everything that you think it does, Jacques. It sounds actually like this H.C. Cross guy, and it's later confirmed, he did work for the Battelle Memorial Institute, and it seems that he is describing their study at that time, which was occurring behind the scenes for a couple of years, coinciding with the Robertson panel, which would culminate in, that's right, Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14, Stanton Friedman's favorite document. Every time I ever saw him, he always talked about this. And that was released publicly in 1955. valet said, well, no, hold on. No, there's more to this. Again, what about the insinuation of secret flights and things in airspace where UFO sightings have occurred? And furthermore, yes, even though historically we now know that there were about 3,200 Blue Book files on hand that the Battelle Institute had for their own study, valet apparently, and Alan, his contention, I think, at the time had been that they hadn't been made privy to that, which really coming back around to a gripe that he and Hynek had at the time, they and many others were afraid that Blue Book was really just a public relations campaign. The military seems to be doing their own studies, and they're not really letting us, the scientists, who are supposed to be involved, look at all the information. So valet maintains that this actually is a important document, and it kind of shows some of the hijinks from over the years. Other researchers are a little more dismissive of it. You know, I understand why, really, but I think at the time that valet saw it, he couldn't have known all the things that would come out decades later. He's even pointed that out. At the time he wrote about it in his journals, he's in his 20s. He didn't have all the documents, all the information. It definitely seemed more problematic at that time. And yeah, there's still probably some concerns, you know, that we could kind of extrapolate from this, namely the fact that valet and Hynek had been repeatedly told about a group of scientists, probably at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, who were involved in study of UFO files. So the question still remains, to my knowledge, guys, that's never come out publicly, who this group of scientists were. But I think valet, probably because of having heard that, was inclined to believe that there were secret studies going on within the government, and he interpreted the Pentacle document as being further evidence of that. And in fact, Ruppelt also talked about a group of scientists that looked into the Lubbock lights. And if you read the report on unidentified flying objects at the end of the chapter on the Lubbock lights, he talks about a group of scientists, because of their connections with the military and the Air Force, had access to the real documents on this, and they were nuclear physicists and scientists, and they believed these things were from outer space. So, I mean, who was this group of scientists? I don't, to my knowledge, think that's ever come to light.
Well, isn't that the whole issue, right? Every time this stuff comes up, oh, now we've got a brand new Pentagon investigation. And Gene, you pointed out this a number of times. They tend to forget all of this history of the subject that folks like yourself, Micah, and myself to some extent, you seem to be really caught up on it. But I mean, we know this. If the Russians or the Chinese or some other nation had some kind of advanced aircraft, I think we'd know about it. Like maybe not we out here in the public, but I mean, think of the detection capabilities that the U.S. Department of Defense has. I mean, they've got satellites that are out past the moon that can look on the other side of the moon. Anything that goes on, they know what goes on. They know when every single airplane lands and takes off on this planet. If another country had this stuff, they'd know. And they've been investigating this for years and years and years and years and years. But every time we try to get into where the people are who are doing the investigation, things get murky real fast. I was trying to figure out Elizondo's chain of command, where he comes in, who he reports to. And people just don't even want to talk about it. It seems like, well, why not? This is the string that if we can pull on this string, that chain of command has got to lead to where these people are and have been for years. There's no way that they've taken all of this information that they've got from all of their detection capability and just thrown it into some box in a corner somewhere where nobody looks at it.
Yeah. Well, another fair question is, let's say it's our technology. Then why do we have a UAP task force to study it? Do we appropriate $22 million, even though that's just, a fly on the rear end of the world? But, I mean, that was the appropriation for the original ADIB program.
Well, you see, the reason that they did that is because they need to buy 30 toilet bowls.
Yeah. No doubt.
And that's what it costs, 30 toilet bowls. Or they funnel the money elsewhere. I mean, the thing we have to look at now is we live at a time when we have an administration that will move funds around to areas in which they were not appropriated. $22 million is chump change. Apparently, most of it went, I guess, to Bob Bigelow, as was apparent from the statements at the time. But then again, this whole thing sounds interesting to the public. Oh, they're finally investigating UFOs. Isn't that wonderful? But as we said before,
what's been going on all these years? We'll find out. More to come with Gene, Randall, Micah. Micah, you haven't done it in a lot of years, so you're going to do it now. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Are you a business owner that needs a large supply of face masks?
Do you have a large family and need a large supply of face masks?
And want high quality but not high prices? Then you want sunny-bay.com.
Our face masks are a better quality than Costco and lower price than Amazon.
There's none better than sunny-bay.com.
See for yourself. Go to sunny-bay.com and place your order today.
Again, business owners, large families, and anyone who needs a large supply of quality disposable face masks. Click sunny-bay.com.
Be sure and look for our volume discounts.
Our high-quality cloth face masks are handmade in the USA.
We also have N95 masks.
See our quality, get details, and order at sunny-bay.com, a Biomed DB design company.
Remember, volume discounts for large quantities at sunny-bay.com.
Just click sunny-bay.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Micah Hanks, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy. And we were talking about Pentagon, of course, but anything covering government programs with regard to UFOs. And then out of the blue, of course, the revelation about a new Pentagon UFO study. And you think, wait a minute, folks, what's been going on all these years? Thousands, millions of people have seen UFOs. We had Project Blue Book. Then we had silence, except for a few mogul balloon stories about Roswell. But there's no information. It's all brand new. It never happened before. I guess we go back to the October surprise in the making.
Well, yeah, we may get a surprise. But again, I think for a lot of people, all the coverage UFOs are getting has been a surprise. You know, I go out from time to time, and yes, I know this is hard to believe, but I actually have friends, and I'll go out and I'll visit with them from time to time. I'm not always reading UFO books.
Wait a minute, you have friends? Hold on.
I didn't mean to startle you, Gene, but yeah, I wanted to drop that gently. But yeah, I met some friends for cocktails recently, and they said, yeah, we heard something about, didn't the government say that there actually are UFOs or something like that? I mean, that's about the level of awareness most people who don't follow this sort of stuff have. Now, granted, most of my friends are at least up to speed on it because people who are around me, they're going to hear me talk about it. But, you know, it's interesting from time to time to visit with people who don't keep up with it and see what the general word on the street is. Did the Pentagon say they got some video or something? Well, who knows what that? That could be anything, you know? So it's not as impactful for them. And a lot of people had said, you know, when the Pentagon actually released their information about this, John Greenwald and I went on a very well-known late-night radio program and talked about the significance of the Pentagon release of these videos, which nobody else seemed to really pay attention to in this era of COVID-19 and everything. But I think the other side of that is that not only are people now kind of getting used to the idea of seeing stories about UFOs in major, you know, papers of record like the New York Times, but they also don't think about this in terms of the history of this subject. And to them, they're like, okay, the government says there's some stuff. This could be ours. I don't know. I don't care. Pour me another one, you know? That's, I think, just about the level of engagement and interest that many people have. Now, there are also a lot of people who are fairly new to the subject. Grant Cameron has used this expression, the young guns, in reference to a lot of the younger, new UFO researchers who operate mostly on social media, you know, Twitter, and they have blogs and things. Yet again, many of them, they act as though the beginning of the phenomenon coincided with the foundation of the To the Stars Academy and, you know, Tom DeLonge getting involved. And that's essentially where they and where their focus not only is, but has remained since around 2017, which is a little frustrating for me because, you know, I've spoken about Lou Elizondo. I extend that to Chris Mellon and to Tom DeLonge and all the people who have been involved in bringing so much public attention to this over the last few years. But, you know, for a lot of us who have been doing this for a long time, guys, we're kind of like, welcome to the party. Glad, you know, fashionably late, but hey, at least you got here.
You know, it's interesting about the To the Stars Academy. There's a story I read some years back saying it was like $45, $48 million in debt, according to an SEC filing. Wait a minute. What are they doing with all that money? What's it being spent on? They no longer have a public offering. If you go on the site, there's no longer a public offering. And you really have to dig into the site to know that it's about UFOs. It's not always obvious from the front. So I just wonder about that whole thing.
Yeah, I just hope that, you know, like the ATIP money, maybe they aren't sending it to MUFON. I mean, with all the stuff MUFON's had going on right now. And I say that not to make a joke in poor taste, but, I mean, we do have to actually acknowledge that when Bigelow was taking some of that money that was appropriated, like you pointed out, and that was being sent to MUFON, I would like to know what really came of that and what kind of information was gleaned in the furtherance of the Pentagon's own studies, not to be critical of the fact that the Pentagon is studying and that Bob Bigelow felt that MUFON, you know, again, one of the largest civilian investigative organizations in the world, not to say that that was a bad idea, but I mean, I would like to know, seriously, what was the information that he gleaned that was obtained with the funding that was going to MUFON at that time. And one of the reasons I really want to ask that question is because I've got friends who have been associated with that organization for years. At the time that Bigelow was funding MUFON, it wasn't secret. It came up on this program. I was talking about it. I was discussing it with many members of MUFON at the time. And I was asking them, what's up with Bob Bigelow's interest in MUFON and funding it? Why? What is the nature of this relationship? When James Carrion, who's also been on this show in the past, and he's a very interesting guy and also a very intelligent commentator on this, you know, his book, The Rosetta Deception, I think makes for some great reading about the history of this phenomenon. I've reached out to James a few times, and I don't get the impression he's terribly interested in talking about all this with people these days, although he does occasionally comment on it. Kerrion, when he resigned from MUFON, you might say that some of the controversy associated with that organization actually goes back to him leaving. And when he left, he was saying, I was uncomfortable with the fact that we weren't told who was bankrolling us. Bigelow had been saying he wanted John Schussler to have a clearance. Why would he need a clearance if this wasn't money coming from government? And not like this is any kind of big revelation. I mean, there was an episode of Conspiracy Theory with Jesse, you know, Jesse the Governor Ventura. Yeah, they did an episode talking about all this, but of course on the show they speculated that the money might be coming from aliens, extraterrestrials.
Whatever happened, by the way, to Jesse Ventura? He was on the Paracast maybe 8 years ago, and we had fun with him because first they said he can only stay for an hour. And then I asked him, would you mind staying a little longer? He said, well, you know, let's just see how it goes. And he went for the full show.
Wow.
But I haven't heard of him in a long time.
No, he doesn't seem to be as involved. I wouldn't mind picking his brain, though. See what the old guy's up to, huh?
To sum up on this a little bit, I mean, if we go back to when they first started looking into the phenomenon and trying to figure out what it was, we're talking August 1948 when they wrote the estimated the situation, the one that said, we think that these are interplanetary. That was 72 years ago. They've known for that long already that they're not from here. You know, why is it that everybody's going, oh, well, we're just investigating it now. We don't know. You know, are they real? Yeah, they're real. They're not coming from anywhere around here. We're not sure where. You know, interstellar seems to be the logical, most reasonable explanation, but we're not sure. But we've known for this long. Like, that's a long time. And yet, it just seems like, oh, we're just finding out about it now?
Yeah, it's a little odd. Boy, I really would love to see a copy of that estimate of the situation. Not that I think that it would necessarily be a tremendous benefit. It would be a novelty at this point, really. Just to see what the estimate was and the rationale for why they believed that the most likely explanation was extraterrestrial. And, of course, they caught so much flack from top brass, which resulted in the destruction of all these documents. But, you know, Ruppelt had described seeing one and other commentators. I mean, I'm sure there must have been Air Force men and women, presumably at that time, who probably came across a copy. It seems kind of strange to me that every single copy was actually destroyed, because, I mean, if you look at the history of this phenomenon and all the documents that turn up from time to time, I was chatting with David Marler a couple of years ago. Man, it was funny because we were standing out on a windy street in the middle of Hewlett, Wyoming, which is as close as you get to traveling back to the 1890s.
Okay. We're going to go back through time in our next segment to the 1890s. But first, with Gene Randall and Micah, you're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Congressional lawmakers have left Capitol Hill for the remainder of the August recess without a deal for the next COVID-19 relief package, which is expected to send another stimulus payment to most Americans. The House and Senate are now both on recess. House Democratic leaders and negotiators from the White House have worked this month to find a deal on another relief bill. Both chambers have crafted relief aid, but the two sides remain far apart on certain provisions. Unless negotiators reach an agreement, lawmakers will not return to Capitol Hill until September. The House is scheduled to return September 14th, and the Senate the second week of the month. Adding to the uncertainty are both parties' national nominating conventions, which will be held over the next 2 weeks. The Democrats will stage theirs next week, and the Republicans a week later. This is USA Radio News. The U.S. Postal Service sent dozens of states letters saying that some mail-in ballots may not be counted in time for the November election. It's a warning that further complicates the role of the USPS in the voting process. The Washington Post was the first to report that Thomas Marshall, General Counsel and Executive Vice President for the U.S. Postal Service, sent letters to 46 states and Washington, D.C. He told the states some ballots may not arrive in time to be counted. Los Angeles area officials lifted some evacuation orders as firefighters battled a 17,000-acre blaze amid what could be a record-breaking heat wave in Southern California. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection said the blaze, which started Wednesday, was only 12% contained. The fire was situated near Lake Hughes, an unincorporated community in Los Angeles County. So far, the wildfire has destroyed at least 21 structures. You're listening to USA Radio News.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So is that what Make America Great Again means, if we go back to the 1890s? That's political. I'm so sorry. Micah Hanks, go ahead.
Yeah, that was with Marler, though, and he was just talking about how he had acquired some old Blue Book files that, again, a Blue Book employee had apparently kept for all those years, and that I think they ended up in a dumpster somewhere when somebody's house ended up being emptied out, and somebody found the documents and didn't really know what they were and was like, oh, you know, here's some old government documents. I mean, people do this all the time. Here's an old mirror. Here's an old stereo. Here's an old book. And they'll put stuff on eBay just to see who bites because they're rare collectors, you know, people who enjoy nostalgia or antiques or whatever. And, you know, they'll dumpster dive and find whatever looks good and then pop it up on eBay after they've cleaned it off and sell it. And you can usually make some money doing that. David finds this box, I believe, if I remember this correctly, he had found these online and then actually bought some of the old Blue Book documents. And again, David, he has such an incredible collection of files. I've never been to his house. He's, of course, invited me, and if I'm ever out west, I'll be certain to stop in. But, you know, it was depicted on television recently on the Unidentified program. So if you watch that show on History Channel, David Marler on the episode about the Triangle UFOs is there with Chris Mellon in David's research room, and you can see it there. But yeah, he's got some of those files. So my point is, it's really interesting to me that estimate of the situation, that a copy hasn't turned up over the years, that they were successful in destroying all of them. And I would really like to see a copy, but I don't know that it would necessarily further our knowledge about the phenomena after all these years.
Well, I guess it depends on how you define further our knowledge, right? Because we still, for the new people out there, they're in a state of, well, you know, do we even know what they are? Are they real? I mean, people who have done the studying on it, we know they're real. They're not something imaginary. There's some kind of a craft that we don't know where they come from. And that makes them alien, regardless of where they come from. So we know that much. That is incredible in and of itself.
Yeah.
Simply because we don't know the actual, you know, origin, whether it's a, you know, another planet or an alternate universe, which seems less likely to me because, well, we know this universe exists. We're not really sure about other ones yet. We, you know, it's possible, but we know this one exists.
Speak for yourself, Randall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I've kind of taken a renewed interest. Now, I'm not saying that this is what I think UFOs are. I'm not endorsing this. I'm just saying it's an interesting conjecture. And if anything, I actually think too many conjectures in ufology, personally, I think they can be damaging. And I try actually to always keep any conjectures or ideas about what the source may be at arm's length at all times. I mean, I study unidentified aerial phenomena or unidentified flying objects, whichever term, flavor of the month you want to use, but UAP has become more popular. And I do like it. I get a little pushback from some of the old guard who say, you know, no, this is annoying. You know, I heard Kevin Randall mention recently that he's very annoyed by everybody saying UAP now. But again, one interpretation might be that these objects, based on their propulsion dynamics, whatever it is that they do to actually move through space, that might not be flight as we know it, actual airlift as aircraft operate. So it might actually be better to say unexplained or unidentified aerial phenomena. That also would account for, you know, for some of the natural varieties, ball lightning, geophysical phenomena, earthquake lights and things. And I study all that stuff. That's one reason I like UAP. It's not explicit references to controlled aircraft as UFO seems to imply. And again, let's not forget that Ruppelt introduced UFO because flying saucer was too specific. He wanted a more ambiguous term. So what's going to be less ambiguous than UAP when we have to change it again? That's a good question.
You know what? There is a forgotten acronym.
Yeah.
UAO. Unidentified Aerial Objects. That's what APRO used, one of the early UFO organizations.
Yeah, the Lorenzans. Yeah. You got along great with them, too, I hear.
Oh, terrific. Just so wonderful. Now, Jim Lorenzen was a pussycat. Carl Lorenzen had something stuck somewhere that I can't explain, because I had one interaction with her about whether I gave her proper permission for some photograph I ran in a small UFO magazine, which actually appeared in Fate magazine. And Fate had no problem with it. So I don't know what happened, except this went down in 1965. This ages me. I met the Lorenzans in 1975 in Fort Smith, Arkansas, at a UFO, UAO, UAP convention, or flying saucer convention, and that's all she remembered from 10 years earlier about me.
Oh, my.
10 years, I frankly had not thought anything about her at all. Nothing, zilch. I mean, the organization, yes, but not her as a person.
By my. Live and let live, I say. Yeah.
Live and let die.
Or that. Yeah, that works too. And, you know, and speaking of Fate magazine, I need to check in on Phyllis Gall, because Gall, you know, she lives right over the mountain. She moved down here to North Carolina a couple of years ago. And so, you know, I check in on her from time to time. It's always good to do that. You know, again, as much as I love the history of this topic, and of course, you know, any night with Phyllis and reviewing the old files at the Fate Farm is, you know, again, just going to be a delight. But yeah, I love all that stuff. And as things change and as people are acting like this is all something very new, again, I'm not all that old. I mean, I'm like 37, right? But I've spent a lot of time reading about these subjects over the years, and I really take a passionate interest in the chronicling of the history. And, you know, I'm no Barry Greenwood. I'm no Jan Aldrich. I mean, there are a lot of guys, you know, who Fran Ridge, you know, a lot of people who have done far more extensive work. You know, Thomas Tullian, you know, the entire UFO historical group, research group, you know, and I have to highly recommend the book UFOs and Government, a Historical Inquiry that they produced. Powell and Swords actually led the charge on that, but there are a number of co-authors, all these guys, intimately involved in the chronicling of the history of the phenomena from a serious academic perspective, and so badly needed, because quite obviously most people who are even tangentially studying this these days seem to have no knowledge, or at least very little, about the history of this topic. And if you really want to understand what it may be, what it may entail, where it may originate from, we have to be able to understand the history.
You know, that's interesting, too. So we have this story about this Pentagon UFO study, and you have all these organizations that have for many years followed the phenomenon. We even have the APRO files stuck in somebody's file cabinets in a garage somewhere. By the way, they will not let anyone see them to this very day, so far as I know. I know Chris O'Brien's been trying to find out about them. But we have all this amazing history, all these sightings, many of which have still not been disclosed. And what's happening now is we're all going to think about this Pentagon study, especially if it brings pay dirt. If it's just buried down a black hole and we hear nothing about it, oh, they're still after it and they're on the case and don't worry about it, and it goes through multiple administrations. If there's no October surprise, if there's no disclosure, we'll forget about it. Or, conversely, if there is some kind of disclosure, if this does lead to something about UFOs, even then, nobody's going to remember the rest of us.
Yeah.
We'll be relics of history. We'll be forgotten. We'll be buried.
It wouldn't be the first time. You know?
Speak for yourself.
I just wonder how many times we're going to have to go through this awakening process, you know? I hope, though, that if there's anything close to a resolution or a revolution would work as it relates to the UFO subject, I just hope that happens before the next meteor strikes the Earth and destroys everything.
When's that happening? I have to write this down.
Yeah, I know. I've got it on my calendar, but it's in the other room. I got to check check in on that. I know that right now, what are we in the middle of? Is it the Perseids right now?
Well, we're in the middle, possibly, of Armageddon. I mean, I remember all those movies in the 80s and 90s about what would happen in 2010, 2020, that we'd had, like, end-of-the-world experiences, and everybody became zombies except for a few people, and we had, like, a movie, Escape from New York, with Kurt Russell. And I think, hey, somebody knew something. We'll find more. With Micah, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
If you or a loved one is a survivor of abuse by Boy Scouts of America representatives as far back as the 1970s, we urge you to speak up. We'll stand with you and get you the help and financial compensation you deserve. A jury in Portland, for example, awarded $18.5 million in punitive damages in one Boy Scout sexual abuse case. The Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy, and funds have been set aside to compensate those injured. Time is limited, and so are the funds. Call today. Don't wait. For free information on how to file your claim, call All Survivors Advocates right now. We have a long track record in helping our clients get the legal justice and compensation they deserve. Please, we are ready to help you. Call today.
800-364-2984. 800-364-2984. 800-364-2984. That's 800-364-2984.
This is me, the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
So think about it here. Think about all those movies and about the end of the world predictions. Think about Star Trek First Contact. In the middle of like 2050 or something, we have this crazed inventor. And he invents warp drive, and the rest of civilization is just gone to hell. And think, we're almost there now.
Yeah, we're teetering on the brink. Could, you know, it's funny, I watched the original Mad Max the other night. Such an interesting film in hindsight, especially after that franchise, you know, got more out there, and later installments was able to more convincingly convey this sort of futuristic kind of apocalyptic scenario. The first film, it's just kind of like, you know, they're driving around out in the desert, you know, in Australia. Still a good film, though, and there were a lot of things about it that were enjoyable. But, you know, what would it take to get us to that point? You know, it's funny because I've had this conversation with a number of people over the last few weeks where I kind of look at threat potentials. And I think that this is an important way to look at a lot of things in the world. And I actually include UFOs in that subject group. Okay, UFOs, we don't know where they're from, what their actual full capabilities are. But as far as their maneuverability, they have defensive capabilities that seem to preclude any need for use of overt offensive capabilities. If we look at Dave Fravor's description of his interaction with that so-called Tic Tac, I think he'd said that he sort of coined that term, but actually Chad Underwood later said that he was the one that actually called it a Tic Tac. One of those guys did, and they all described their interactions with this object and how quickly it was able to move and, you know, how formidable it was. You know, anything that is so capable of that kind of maneuverability obviously is a threat potential in terms of its unknown origin and its unknown capabilities, but capabilities which quite obviously exceed ours. Even if it's not an overt threat, it's certainly something that should be taken seriously as a potential concern. From a national security standpoint, I mean, I've really more and more over time begun to look at UFOs like that, even though, yet again, a review of the history doesn't show very much explicit connection between danger, death, anything like that. Now, some people would say, what about the Mantell incident? You know, it was even Ruppelt's opinion that the Mantell incident involved a skyhook balloon that Thomas Mantell had been pursuing. I know Fran Ridge had reopened that case a few years ago, and that some researchers have actually said that there is actually good reason for questioning the skyhook balloon narrative. But let's also not forget that Ruppelt was a fairly skeptical guy. He was pretty skeptical of that incident. He was skeptical of the Lubbock Lights. And then in the second edition of his book, he came out and said, I really don't think there's anything to UFOs very much at all. And then he strangely died at, what was it, age 36 or 37. So we'll be left for all time wondering what was with that about face, you know.
Kehoe mentioned it in one of his books, that they were pressuring him, the Air Force, pressuring him because of that original book, which had such a positive view of UFOs, and that he wrote the final three chapters under that pressure. Whether it hastened his heart attack, I mean, he died at 37. Today, someone with a heart condition, no sweat. They take care of it. When people like Edward Ruppelt in the 1950s, or even Bobby Darin, the famous entertainer, I think in the 70s, he died in his 30s of a congenital heart ailment. Again, these are things that could have been dealt with our present technology, but not then. Based on what Kehoe said, and I see no reason to think that Kehoe was lying about it, Ruppelt was under a lot of pressure.
That would make sense, yeah. And obviously they were pretty close, those two. There definitely seems to be a connection there. And I wouldn't have been surprised if that had been the main reason for Ruppelt's about face. Although, you know, going back and reading the second edition of the book, it makes for interesting reading. Most of the versions that you can buy online nowadays are of that first edition because of the favorable light that it spins the UFO subject in. I actually was able to find a copy of the second edition. It's interesting to compare and contrast. It really is.
It is like reading two different books. It really is. I mean, it's the same writing style and everything.
Yeah, but I mean, his tone just goes completely in the direction of dismissal. And at the end, he essentially says, you know, best I can tell, remember how the first edition ends. He's saying, I suspect that with the advancements, you know, that we are looking at right now, and I'm not quoting, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, you know, in the next few years, I think our scientists and our military boys, we're going to be able to put a finger on this and figure out what this is. And he was hopeful that we would come to a resolution of the phenomenon, but that we couldn't identify all of these and that there were incidents that absolutely remained unexplained. And then in the next one, he's just like, you know, this is all just a modern myth. It's a myth of the space age. There's really nothing to this. You know, I've become increasingly convinced that, you know, this is all just misperception and people's attitudes and things. And there are a number of things that culminate in what we call the study of UFOs, but none of them involve flying saucers. And I'm thinking, gosh, really? How is it that you say that now in light of what you said just a couple of years ago? Yeah, so was he actually an Air Force employee? He was still at the time that he died, wasn't he?
I think at the point of the end of his life, he had gone back into civilian life. I'm not sure. I recall the words, four words, when asked about whether he thinks UFOs are real or spaceships. The four words in the book were, I'm positive they don't.
Yes.
Whether they exist or not. I'm positive they don't. And that, like I said, it was like reading two different books. I mean, he had more sightings and such. But again, it's like this big letdown. I mean, he's approaching it in a very fair way with a certain degree of skepticism. He laced into Ray Palmer, the Chicago publisher, about the Maury Island case. And Palmer was ballistic in those years. I think at one time threatened to sue Ruppelt, but of course Ruppelt was smart enough not to identify Palmer.
Yeah.
And the connection there. Very interesting. When you return for the After the Paracast, I want to take all this and talk about whether we might actually be facing disclosure, but that's going to be for those who subscribe to the Paracast Plus. We'll let you hear Micah talk about that. But as you see, there's so much rich history about UFOs. And I hope if nothing else happens from the CNN story and about other publications that will follow it up, and I haven't seen any follow-ups or anything else since we've been doing the show, that might change by the time you listeners hear it. I would hope that people will begin to think of all that stuff that has gone before and how it relates to what we have now. Because the UFOs didn't start with Tic Tac sightings. But that's the impression that's almost being created. And maybe all the other stuff, well, that's just a lot of nonsense. We shouldn't believe any of that. It's a lot of, we don't want to say the word because this is a family radio show. We can't use those words. We have to use friendly family words to say total nonsense. How's that?
That's all a bunch of malarkey. Yeah, it's all malarkey.
That's good. We can also do our thesaurus here. and think of all the words for nonsense. And then with After the Paracast, we can say the words. So, Micah Hanks, for those who want to know more about what you're doing, give us a description. How do we find you?
Yeah, let me give you a disclosure. Oops, darn, I thought it was After the Paracast, and we'll make sure we have some incredible disclosures for that After the Paracast segment, you guys. I'll make sure of that. But as far as where the general listenership can find me and my work, it's all available at one place, MicahHanks.com. I've got my blog there. All the podcasts are at MicahHanks.com/podcast. Be sure and check out all that stuff. And, of course, you know, people are welcome to reach out to me on Twitter at MicahHanks or info at, you guessed it, my name, MicahHanks.com is the email. I'm always happy to hear from people. I can't respond to all the emails, but you know how it is. I'm almost as busy as Gene, so, you know, I get to as many as I can.
Well, I have multiple email addresses. That's why. It's one of those fearsome mistakes. You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast. You can also find a pair of official Paracast fan club community group thingies. Can they patent that word, group thingies, on Facebook? Okay. And then we also have branded merchandise. If you go to theparacast.shop, you can buy T-shirts and throw pillows and all that good stuff. Four different logos, including a couple designed by Randall. So they have to be great. That's theparacast.shop. And then we have the Paracast Plus, where we offer the special gold standard version of this show, free of the network ads with enhanced audio. The After the Paracast podcast, a special extra show, uncensored. We never know what's going to happen next. And, of course, Micah will be back on that particular episode of After the Paracast to amplify the stuff here and bring out lots of other goodies. We also have some music from Randall. We'll be adding some classic radio shows from Bob Zanotti's Coffee Clutch that we'll talk about in the next few weeks, featuring Gray Barker and Ivan T. Sanderson and a whole lot more. Go to theparacast.plus for more info, theparacast.plus. Micah Hanks, thanks for joining us on the Paracast.
Always a pleasure.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American-made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.